Hello, everyone. Today is Thursday, January 31st, 2013. My name is Steve Ray, and together with my colleague Leo Oberst, we're co-chairing this session number 3 of the 2013 Ontology Summit. The theme of the overall Ontology Summit is Ontology Evaluation Across the Ontology Life Cycle. And this session is on what's called Track A, which is addressing the intrinsic aspects of ontology evaluation. We've titled today's session, Intrinsic Aspects of Ontology Evaluation, Practice and Theory. And the reason for that will become clear in just a moment. So if you look at the introductory slide set, either downloaded or on the virtual screen, I'm ready to go to slide number 2 at this point. The mission of this particular track on intrinsic aspects, in contrast to last week's where we heard about the extrinsic aspects of evaluation, is ultimately that we believe that there are a number of, as we say, intrinsic characteristics. In other words, sort of fairly context-free structural aspects of a well-designed ontology that can be checked for and or measured in terms of just establishing whether the ontology is put together well, if you like. And this has possibly, we'll find out during this summit, is somewhat separable from what we have been calling the extrinsic evaluation, which would have to be fit for purpose, if you like, or the performance of the ontology to meet some kind of requirement. So on slide 2, you can see some examples. They're just there to get you thinking in the right way about, you know, the proper use of subsumption and the proper use of cardinality or symmetry in relations, domain and range things lining up, and you'll be hearing about some of these things in today's speakers' presentations. On slide number 3, then just going into a little more depth on that issue, you can read the title as well as I, or the bullets, but basically we will hope to explore in this session, as well as a session on March 7th, which is on this same track, explore the dimensions of how one might evaluate intrinsic aspects, looking at the semantics, looking at the structure, looking at the logic, etc. Well, what kind of methods might best be used, and you'll see several examples of those methods in today's presentations. What are the right criteria, and what are the right kinds of properties to measure? Slide number 4 is our call to you to help us provide input on the chat session or during discussions and in questions after these presentations of what are we missing? You know, what we want to get as full a comprehensive coverage of this as possible in terms of what might be useful metrics, what might be useful errors to look out for or practices to follow when designing ontology, again, from the intrinsic perspective. But there are some questions that we put together with credit to Leo, who put a lot of these questions down. But we heard last week about white box testing and black box testing. And so one question is intrinsic evaluation pretty much like white box testing in the software engineering world? Is that a pretty much a straightforward mapping of that concept? And how separable or differentiable are the intrinsic properties from the extrinsic? Is it indeed possible to have entirely context-free evaluations of ontologies, and or even if one can do that, is that useful? So, and finally, how does this all relate to the ontology lifecycle aspects we've been talking about? I'm going to invite Leo to expand upon the very last question there, which was distinguishing ontological from epistemological and from semantic aspects. Leo, did you have a thought on that?
Just one quick thought. I'm hoping that participants will have some too. over the virtual sessions in the future, including beyond today. But epistemological, in some sense, for example, people will have probabilistic assignments where there's beliefs associated with the ontology. Many languages support that. So, for example, there's a prow, which is a probabilistic owl based on Bayesian semantics. There may be other aspects that come into play when you have more epistemology intermixed with your ontology. And then semantic aspects, things such as naming conventions, ways of referring to things as opposed to things in the world. I think we just need to be aware these are issues.
Fair enough. So moving on to slide number 5 then, I have the pleasure of introducing our speakers for today. And I've roughly categorized these into two types of talks. The first, which is by Maria Poveda and her colleagues in Madrid, I'm saying is basically looking for different kinds of errors through pattern recognition or occurrence of certain attributes in an ontology. And then the second and third presentations take more of a metrics definition and metrics measurement approach for assessing the quality of an ontology. Again, looking in a fairly context-free way in terms of branching and things like that. So I'm not going to try and massacre everyone's names, but the presenters for these talks today are Maria Poveda from Madrid, and I will let her introduce her colleagues. The second talk is from Dr. Samir Tartir in Amman, Jordan, and a collaborative effort across the world here. And thirdly, we'll be hearing from Ms. Astrid Duque-Ramos, who also I will have introduced her colleagues. From Spain. So why don't we go ahead and get started, and the first talk then is titled The Pitfall Catalog and Oops, An Approach to Ontology Validation. And Maria, I will pass the baton to you.
Thank you. Well, hello everybody, this is Maria, and thank you for attending this talk. This talk, in which I'm going to present the work I have done together with my supervisors, who are Mari Carmen Suarez de Figueroa and Asunción Gómez Pérez. This work is part of my PhD thesis, and this presentation is about an approach to ontology validation consisting of a catalog of pitfalls and OOPS, that is an online tool to detect such pitfalls. Well, in slide 2, as you can see in slide 2, I've divided my speech into 4 parts. The first part, I will give an introduction to the problem, and then I'm going to present the pitfall catalog. Okay. Yeah. After that, I'll show how OOPS has been developed and how it works. Finally, I will wrap up with some conclusions and future work. So if in slide 3, in the last decades, several methodologies, as methodology, ontonology, diligent, and recently the neon methodology, has been developed to support the ontology evaluation process. One of the advantages of using a methodology when developing an ontology is to improve the final quality of the ontology being built. However, even though we use methodologies, developers must deal with a range of difficulties and handicaps. So these difficulties can imply the appearance of errors in ontologies. For this reason, the ontology evaluation activity should be carried out at any ontology development project. Move to slide 4. So due to the importance of such an activity, a lot of research work has been done. For example, there are a number of quality evaluation frameworks to approach ontology validation. Also, methods that evaluate an ontology depending on the final use or reuse that is going to be done with this with the ontology. Also, there are quality models that are based on features and a list of criteria and metrics. In addition, there are tools that try to automate part of the process of ontology evaluation. However, despite of the importance of this ontology evaluation activity, it is not very popular between developers and practitioners, mostly when in projects where developers are not ontological engineers. This some reason for this lack of ontology evaluation could be the current time-consuming and tedious nature of the evaluation activities, like looking for too much information or the necessity of having true formal knowledge about ontologies and its theoretical basis. Also, sometimes the lack of awareness of the necessity for evaluating ontologies could be the problem for not doing this activity. So in slide 5, in this sense, our goal is to make ontology evaluation easier for developers by means of reducing time and effort. One of the focus for us is helping people who work in companies and that they are not ontologists, or they have not too much knowledge in knowledge representation or OWL or the languages. One of the use cases we consider important to us is the linked data use case, because a lot of domain experts are involved and the times to produce the ontology are usually short. So there is no time to develop a whole life cycle for the development of ontology, and sometimes the evaluation is not done. To achieve our goals, our approach consists on first creating and maintaining a pitfall catalog. In this catalog, we describe potential errors that we have seen in other ontologies in the first version. After that, we update the catalog by also looking at ontologies already developed and also with feedback or suggestion from other ontological engineers or users. And also, our approach consists on developing mechanisms to detect pitfalls in an automated way, and also providing a user-friendly interface so that people are kind to evaluate their ontologies. So now, in slide 6, we have again the table of contents, and we are going to move on to the pitfall catalog. Well, as I have said before, the first version of the catalog was mainly mainly contain the pitfalls we observed in 26 ontologies developed by students at UPM. These students were having lessons about ontologies, theoretical lessons about ontologies, about the NEON methodology, also as languages as RDF and OWL. After one semester, they developed a final ontology that were the ontologies we analyzed manually, looking for errors. This work started in 2008, and we have been analyzing ontologies in 3 master courses. During that analysis, we realized that some of the problems were already described by other authors, as Gómez Pérez, Natasha Noy, and Rector. So we included that descriptions in our catalog to not reinvent the wheel. So after that, the first catalog version was published in a workshop at 2010, and it contained 24 pitfalls. From that point, we keep updating and analyzing on the things we are developing or we find them published. And up to now, there are 11 new pitfalls in the current catalog. Also, there are pitfalls suggested by people working in linguistics. In addition, we know that not all the errors are equally important, so we want to associate an indicator according to the possible negative consequences. And we are carrying out a survey on ontology pitfall importance, and the URL is in the slide 7. And it's still open, so if you want to collaborate, you are very welcome. In slide 8, we can see the current version of the catalog. Right now it has 35 pitfalls, and we saw in this slide one possible classification. In this classification, we take into account categories as human understanding or pitfall related to logical consistency, also real-world representation, modeling issues, and ontology language specifications. And it should be noted that one pitfall could affect more than one category. If we move to slide 9, we can see some examples of what is a pitfall for us. In the first example, defining wrong in relationships, we consider an error when two relations are defined as inverse, but they are not actually inverse. We found the example where the relation between product and shop, where is sold in and has as inverse is bought in. But in this case, the inverse relation should be something like the place where the products are sold. In the next example, specifying too much the domain or range, as we can see in the example, the range of each official language is too specific, as a country could also have an official language. So maybe it is better to create the relation, the range, as geopolitical objects, so that if a country has a language, it is not classified as a city. Finally, in the last example, we consider an error when a domain or a range is defined as intersection of several classes instead of being the union. And for example, if those classes appearing in the range are disjoint as well, that could lead to a logical consistency error. If we go to slide 10, we can see some important notes about the pitfall catalog. It should be noted that a pitfall could represent or could lead to an error, but not always represent errors necessarily. For example, there are cases where what we have defined as a pitfall is not, maybe because modeling decision. For example, if we want to leave relations with no domain or range for interoperability reasons to make our ontology or vocabulary more interoperable with other vocabularies defined by others. Or, for example, because of ontology requirements, the project could have defined it as, for example, not to define inverse relationship because of efficiency reasons. If we don't want to overload the system with too much reasoning, we might not want to define an inverse for every relation we define. Again, as I have said before, the pitfall are not always really important or equally important to everybody, so we are trying to associate an indicator to each of them, establishing three levels of importance. Well, if we move to slide 11, we can pass to slide 12 to see how what is OOPS and how it works. So in slide 12, OOPS, that stands for Ontology Before Scanner, is a web-based tool, and it is available in the URL shown in the in slide 12. Main characteristic is that it is not dependent on of any ontology development environment, so it doesn't matter where the ontology comes from, that you can always analyze your ontology online without installing any other system, and also no installation process is required. In general terms, OOPS takes an OWL ontology as input and generates an evaluation report after scanning the ontology. And we can have a look closer to the modules involved in the scanner in the slide 13. So the main module of the system is called PIT4Scanner, and right now it scans. Well, right now there are 21 PIT4s implemented out of the 35 included in the catalog. There is one Java class per PIT4, so they can be checked separately. There is no just one module, and this Java classes make the detection in two ways. For example, we can look for general characteristics that apply to the whole ontology. For example, the PIT4 number 10 that is about missing disjointed. So we look that there is no disjoint axioms in the whole ontology. And the other way to look for pitfalls is looking for patterns that affect a number of ontology elements. For example, to detect the pitfall number 5, when we say that two relationships that are inverse, maybe they shouldn't be inverse. In this case, we look for two relationships that are defined as inverse, but the range of one of them is not exactly the same that the domain of the other one. So sometimes this fact is a hint to make us think that maybe something is not very well defined in those classes and properties. In the slide 14, I'll explain the other two modules. The warning scanner identifies cases where a class or property is not defined using the OWL primitives accordingly. And there is no dedicated Java class for doing this, but these errors flag up during the PIT4 scanner execution. And this is the same for the suggestion scanner module that has no dedicated Java class and looks for properties with equal domain and range. So when a property has the same domain and range, OOPS propose to the user that maybe he or she can think if that property could be symmetric or transitive, or maybe it is not, but it just provide a suggestion. Well, in slide 15, we have the OOPS homepage. On the top, there is the input area where users can enter the URL or the ontologies if they are available online, or paste the OWL coding, and also the buttons to run the system. On the bottom part of the page, there is a brief description of the system and some example of pitfalls. And finally, in the right menu, users can send feedback and suggest new pitfalls, also find documentation, a user guide, technical support, and the pitfall catalog. And at the end, there are some papers about the catalog and OOPS that we have published. In slide 16, we can see an example of execution and the sample of the evaluation results. When the ontology has been scanned by OOPS, it gives this screenshot where for each pitfall that has been detected, only for those that have been detected, those that hasn't been detected do not appear. For each one, we saw the pitfall name and how many times it does appear in the gray area. After that, we saw a brief description of the of what the pitfalls consist on, and finally we saw which elements of the ontology are affected. In this particular case, they say that the pitfall is about missing inverse relationships, and when we saw the elements, first we tried to find some suggestions as possible inverse. So we check domain and ranges, and we can propose hash part as inverse of is part of, because the domain and ranges match. And in the list at the bottom are those relationships for which we can't find a suggestion, so we cannot propose a possible inverse. Well, to wrap up this presentation, I'm going to show some conclusions in slide 18. As a result of our work, we have created a catalog of pitfalls, including references to other authors' work. And it is maintained and updated in a collaborative way, as we take into account our users and other ontological engineers' point of view. This is about the catalog, and regarding OOPS, we can say that it has been a successful start due to the number of users that we know of, and also the number of executions that has been done since we launched the service, and also because the feedback from the people, that the amount of emails and feedback forms that we are getting. We think that its main strengths are the independence of the ontology editor that make it easy just to try to use it, and also its usability, just because you just need to copy a URL or code and press one button. And finally, in slide 19, we are going to see some future lines of work. For the case of the catalog, we plan to continue with the maintenance and to include guidelines about how to solve each pitfalls. We are analyzing the reasons for the pitfalls and in how many ways you can solve these errors, because sometimes there could be more than one option to solve a problem. Also, as we have already said, we are working in associating an indicator according to the level according to the possible negative consequences of each pitfall. And regarding OOPS, we plan to create an extension for ontologies developed to be used in linked data. As I have said before, this use case has characteristics as developers are often domain experts instead of ontological engineers, so maybe they need more support to develop the ontologies. Also, there is little time and resources to evaluate the vocabularies producing and little time to spend in the ontology development process. Also, one important characteristic is that the ontologies developed to be used in linked data are mainly lightweight ontologies or vocabulary, so they don't really need to apply very hard theoretical ontological methods, because most of the time there is no actions or restrictions in those ontologies. So the errors made are more light, I would say. Also, there are characteristics related to the environment, as that ontology should be published online and should be thought for this use. It's not like developing an ontology to be used in an isolated or in a local machine on a local system without interacting with other vocabularies or. Well, sorry. Also, we will launch soon the web service for detecting each pitfall, so that other developers can include these functionalities in other systems. And we are right now testing these services, and we hope to launch them next week. Also, as due to the number of users that we are seeing, or the number of people who use OOPS, we think that it could be a good access point to ontology evaluation. It could be a good way to start to convince developers to evaluate their ontologies, as right now it's really easy. Once they use OOPS, we want to point to other tools, for example, to Eyeball or OntoCheck, or also to list unclassified methods that they can use to make a broader ontology evaluation in their project, like following a step-by-step approach instead of overloading them with a lot of techniques and criteria and methods. Finally, and the most ambitious future line of work from my point of view is to develop a formal language so that people can define pitfalls in a customized way. So you can define what is a pitfall for you, and OOPS will parse this pitfall and can scan the ontologies looking for that. And, well, in slide 20, thank you very much for your attention. We will be glad of answering any questions you might have.
Okay. Can people hear me? Peter, can you hear me?
Yes. Go ahead.
Okay. So, thank you, Maria. It's a very impressive presentation. I especially appreciate the references you provide in the talk. It looks like you've done you and your colleagues have done a very systematic approach to error detection. There have been a number of questions coming up in the chat, and what I'd like to propose, even though I'd love to ask a few right now myself, in the interest of time, I would invite you, Maria, and Marie Carmen to keep going. I noticed Marie has been answering many of the questions on the chat. Keep doing that in the background, but in the interest of time, we're going to move on to the next oral presentation, and but keep the conversation going as well. And if we have time at the end, then I'll open it up for everyone to raise their hands and ask questions via Skype as well. So our second presentation then for today is by Dr. Samir Tartir, on the use of OntoQA, basically, for ontology evaluation and ranking. And Samir?
Okay. Thank you, Steve, for inviting us. So this work on OntoQA I've done with Dr. Arpinar at the University of Georgia and Dr. Chet at Wright State University, where actually the three of us were together at the University of Georgia, but each one of us took a different path. And now we're spread across the world, like you said in the introduction. On the second slide, if you can move to that, please. I would like to just describe what we mean by ontology evaluation. and then talk a few about OntoQA in general by providing an overview, the metrics we use, overall score, and some results, and I'll conclude with some enhancements that we can apply to OntoQA. Moving to slide 3, like Steve said in the introduction, you need to just find a way to evaluate what is a good ontology, what is an ontology that is well-defined. And obviously this can be different to many, to different users. Some users are interested in ontology that have specific features, others have different set of features that they're interested in. So it's not only people, users who will be using an ontology in their work that are interested in evaluating an ontology. It's also ontology developers that need a way to evaluate the ontology they are working on. And especially when they're using a large, they're building a large ontology. Some people are using web scraping to collect information from websites about a certain domain. You know, they let the process work overnight and then in the morning come and check what has been extracted. And this can be very useful in evaluating what has been done the night before. So our OntoQA evaluates both aspects or is useful to both groups of people, either users who have multiple ontologies to choose from or developers who need a way to evaluate their work. Moving to slide 4, OntoQA is a suite of metrics. We have different metrics that I'll come to in a second that evaluate the content of ontologies. There are different types of metrics that cover schema, the schema itself, and the instances or knowledge bases that are included in the ontology. It has been, the first publication on OntoQA was in 2005, and since then it has been cited over 170 times by different people, which is a very good thing. OntoQA is a few feature list. It's tunable, so you can change it to whatever situation you need it to reflect to whatever suits you. It requires minimal user involvement. So if there are set, a standard weights for each metric that, evaluated as a general purpose ontology, but if you are interested, for example, in a large schema size or a very deep ontology, you can tweak it to match your needs, but you don't have to do that if you don't need to. It considers both the schema and the instances of a populated ontology, and that has been a differentiating factor between other approaches and our approach. Moving on to slide 5. Here I show how OntoQA can be used by users looking for an ontology that suits their needs. So a user might come with a set of keywords. He is interested in finding an ontology that matches these keywords. There's the well-known ontology search engine, Swoogl, which is done by a group of people in UMBC, I believe. So I direct these keywords to Swoogl, and then we extract the ontologies from there, apply a few linguistic features, to match synonyms and similar things. And then in the end, we provide a ranking of the ontologies we got from Swoogl. So in some cases, there is a similar ranking to what Swoogl has. Sometimes it's not similar. It depends on, what the user has specified to exactly his needs. The other scenario, which I mentioned before, can be useful for a developer who is populating an ontology or designing an ontology. And there are quite a few people who use OntoQA for that reason. You have an ontology, you would like to get exactly the numbers for that ontology, and you can just enter the URL for the ontology and Entropy, I will provide you the metrics, you know, as numbers that you can use to decide whether the ontology is suitable to what you're intended it for example, the web extraction just got a single class filled up while other classes are not populated. So it can give you a reflection of what has been done in a single ontology. And, of course, you can get these schema metrics for each ontology. If you're searching for keywords and you're interested to find out what each ontology that was retrieved, what's the scores for each metric, you can do that for each ontology retrieved in the previous scenario, on the previous slide. So that was a quick overview of how Entropy AI can be used, and I'll move now to some of the details of what metrics we have defined and how we define them. And I've put in the chat session, maybe I should have included this here, a paper that we have published that includes some details about what each term I'm using in the definition of the metrics. I've put it in the chat session. If I can, if it's possible, I will modify the slides and include that link in the presentation. That might be easier for readers to reference. So, moving on to slide 7, I'll start with the first group of metrics, which relate to the schema. And here, the schema metrics address the design of the schema itself. We have two metrics here, the relationship diversity and the inheritance depth. Let's move to the next slide, and here we have some definitions for each of these metrics. The relationship diversity, it's one of the metrics that maybe early ontologies had a problem in. Early ontologies or previous ontologies had a problem of me being mainly taxonomies. You know, it's full of is-a relationships and very few, meaningful or more meaningful relationships or properties. So the first metric intends to distinguish between these two types of ontologies, whether the ontology has more of a taxonomy-like structure full of is-a relationships, or does it have more rich kinds of relationships. And I define this as P, which is the number of properties in the ontology, divided by the total number of connections between any two classes, which can be a regular property or an is-a relationship. The next metric, schema metric, is the schema depth, and it's mainly to distinguish between. Let me read the definition first, and then I'll comment on it. It describes the distribution of classes across different levels of the ontology inheritance tree. It mainly distinguishes between a top-level ontology that has very broad classes in the ontology. It's spread across a few levels in comparison to a very domain-specific ontology where you have a few classes spread over maybe 10 or 20 levels of inheritance. So if you're interested in a top-level ontology, you might be looking for a very low schema depth. If you're interested in a very specific ontology, a domain ontology that is rich of what is related to what is a different class, you might be interested in a schema with a very high schema depth. On the next slide, number 9, the second group of metrics are concerned with the knowledge base or the instance metrics. The first one was just interested with or focused on the definitions in the schema itself. The second one is how the population of the ontology is going on. For example, it evaluates the placement, distribution, and relationships between the instances. And it can indicate the effectiveness of the schema design. Maybe if you see that a certain class is not being populated or a certain branch of the inheritance tree in the ontology is not being utilized or there's no instances in that area, maybe you need to go back to the ontology, to the schema and redefine it, or maybe you need to change the way data extraction is taking place. So it can give you an idea of what is the instances in that ontology. So we have in this slide number 10, we have three groups in the instance metrics. The first one is overall metrics, then class-specific metrics, and finally, relationship metrics. The first one is just, you know, give you an idea of the what are the instances and how they are populating the classes defined in the schema. The second one is about, for each class, how is it being utilized in the knowledge base, in the instance base. And finally, the relationship specific metrics deal with how relationships are being used in the ontology. And I'll mention a few examples on each one while I'm talking about it. The first subgroup, which is the overall knowledge base metrics, has three metrics. The first one is class utilization, and it's simply about the percentage of classes that have been populated in the knowledge base. And again, this can be very useful for an ontology developer who is building the ontology to see, does the knowledge base cover the classes defined in the schema, or they don't? Because sometimes you really need to change direction if you see maybe one web source is taking over just a branch of the inheritance tree of the schema. So it can give you a good idea of how the population is taking place regarding the schema. The second metric is instance distribution, and it simply gives you an idea if also, in some cases, class utilization or population might be high, but when you look deep into it, you'll see that, you know, one class has 80% of the instances, while others have very few instances. And again, this can be a good indication that, well, maybe this ontology is not suitable to my scenario, or a developer might decide on different ways to populate the ontology. And finally, the cohesion or connectedness. We have found that sometimes when you're building the knowledge base of the ontology, you would end up with a few instances grouped together and not connected to other groups of instances. There are, again, not connected to others. So it's like they form something like you can call an island, each one with connected instances that are not connected to other islands. And CC in here means connected components, basically. Moving on to slide 12, we have the class-specific metrics. And for the first metric, it's class connectivity. And this metric gives you an idea if a certain class in the ontology has instances that are really well connected to other instances that are central, you can call it, in the knowledge base. For example, if you're talking about an ontology that represents a university domain, you would find that the class student instances there are connected to most of the other instances, for example. In that regard, you can call it as more central than other classes that maybe, you know, like drivers or maybe administrative employees in the university. Second one is class importance. And this one is about the numbers of instances in a class. The other one, the connectivity or centrality, was about properties or relationships to other instances. This one is about numbers. Which classes in the ontology are or have more instances than other classes on the ontology. And again, this can be a very good indication of how well the extraction process has been, and it can be, again, a good metric for users or developers. The final metric in here is relationship utilization, and it's similar to the previous measure. So you might have a class where 5 or 6 relationships are defined on that, and in the end, you would find that only one of the relationships or properties on that class have been utilized. For example, a student studies or takes a class, and other relationships are not being utilized. And this can be a very good indication, again, to a user. You know, I'm not only interested in this certain or only in this property. I'm interested in all kinds of properties that a student have. So I might not be interested in this ontology. I might be interested more in that ontology. On the second slide, you can see the relation-specific metric. It's only one metric here. And it's about the popularity or utilization of a relationship in general. So there are different relationships defined over the whole ontology, and you're interested in seeing which property has been utilized more often than others. And it is similar to the previous one, but you're talking here about all the classes, if they have similar properties or relationships to other classes, you're interested in seeing, well, this relationship is being utilized all across the ontology, while others are not even mentioned in the knowledge base. So these metrics, when we're building them, it's based on our experiences and how we saw people, you know, the struggles we were having in building ontologies and in using ontologies in our application. So we thought maybe these metrics and the different groups we've mentioned can be a good indication to a user or a developer to how good the ontology or does it suit his needs. Next slide, and slide number 14, is how we put everything together. It's a simple formula. A score for an ontology is the summation of the weight of each metric times the value of the metric itself. Weights can be, modified by the user himself. There are certain weights that we give, you know, according to our experience in evaluating ontologies. That's according to our needs. Other users might find it more useful to maybe focus on a larger scheme, and I have an example in the coming slides about this. So we have all the relationships, or all the metrics, I'm sorry, and each one has a weight. We multiply the weight by the metric and submit, and it's the score of each ontology. If you would like a score to compare each ontology, then you have it. You can compare ontology A with ontology B according to the weights, according to what you focus on, and in the end, you can select the one that suits you, which might be the higher score. Moving on to slide 15. For example, here we show the SWGO results for ontologies relevant to the term paper. And you can see there is 9 ontologies listed here. Most of them are IO ontologies, but you can find that there are RDF and RDFS ontologies as well. This is the starting point to OntoQA. You start with a keyword or a set of keywords, you find the relevant ontologies from SWGL, and then the results with the default weights are shown in the next slide, number 16. And here I show with different colors what each metric has. So relationship diversity, class match, class count, and there are different metrics that can be useful, and you can clearly see that ontology number six was the highest ranking ontology with the default weights. On the next slide, if we tweak the ontology, tweak the metrics, I'm sorry, to a larger schema size where the numbers are more important. You know, I'm more interested in the richer ontology that has more classes, that has more relationships, for example. Then you can see that, you know, ontology 1, ontology 3, ontology 4, and ontology 8 have higher scores than other ontologies. And it's different than in previous ranking because you're more focused on how rich the ontology schema is. So here you can see that you can tweak the weight according to your needs to suit the application you're going to use the ontology in. And the final slide, in slide 18, you can see that we have done an experiment with these ontologies that are relevant to the keyword paper. We spread them at different, users at the lab at the time, and we ask them to really rank these ontologies according to what they see is more, you know, from best to worst. And we ended up with a correlation of 0.8, which was a very good correlation between the OntoQA rank with the default weights and what the users found to be the rank of each ontology. We have compared also OntoQA to other approaches, and the list of approaches we're comparing to is at the end of the slideshow. So, of course, I'm in slide 19 now. So the approaches we found was of varying levels of user involvement, of how ontologies are being entered to the system, and whether they cover the schema or the schema with the knowledge base. And, you know, as you can see in the table on page 19, there are different levels of how a user can use the system. You know, it has to be a very high involvement. He needs to tweak everything. He needs to study everything. An ontology can be entered. You know, it's a single ontology that you have to feed the system, and then you'll get the results back, and whether the ontology has a schema plus the knowledge base to consider the quality. And as you can see, OntoPA was, a good comparison to the others. It has low user involvement. Ontologies, you can enter your own ontology if you'd like to evaluate that. Or if you'd like us to crawl the web, and we are using a Swoogle, as I said before, we can do that as well. And we consider the schema and the knowledge base. So we can... In the end, on slide 20, I have a few enhancements, and of course, I'll be very happy to hear what you have to suggest. But one of the good suggestions we're having is, why don't you just limit yourself to a certain ontology library like OVO instead of just searching the web through Swoogle for any ontology? Why don't you find me the best ontology in this set of ontologies? And that can be a very useful enhancement to some of the users in the domain. There are different types of data stores. One of our colleagues developed the Grams framework to handle ontologies, and it was very useful, especially with very large ontologies. So Sesame had some struggles with the large ontologies, but Grams was really good in doing that. So some of the enhancements was specifically to change the data store instead of Sesame. In slide 21, here are the systems I use to compare in slide number 19. And thank you. That's all I have.
Thank you, Samir. Again, that's another fascinating approach there. I think if you take a moment now and go back through the chat room, you'll see there are a lot of questions that were left for you to consider. And I would like to move us on toward the third presentation today. And that's going to be presented by Ms. Astrid Ramos of the University of Murcia. And Astrid, maybe check your voice. I'll just make sure I can hear you.
Hello.
Yes.
Okay.
It's pretty good, yeah.
Okay. Thank you for the introduction. Again, I'm Astrid, and I would like to present the work title OQUAR, which is a framework for ontology quality evaluation based on SQUARE. This work was made in cooperation with Gesualdo Tomás Fernández Brace, Robert Stevens, and Natalie Ausen-Dios. Continuing with the second slide, please. First of all, I would like to start introducing SQUARE, the standard for software product quality requirements and evaluation. In terms of discipline maturity, the software engineering discipline is more advanced than ontology engineering due to its longer existence. In order to evaluate software quality, the application of a standard is recommended because it provides a comprehensive specification and evaluation model for the software product quality. It allows for a common language to specify user requirements that are understandable by users, developers, and evaluators. These standards objectively evaluate the quality of software products based on observation and not on opinion. And the quality evaluation could be reproducible. The slide 3, please. Specifically, SQUARE defines all the elements for the evaluation of software products, covering two main processes, the software quality requirements specification and the software quality evaluation. As it is shown in this figure, SQUARE requires the definition of four components, which are quality requirements, quality model, quality metrics, and quality evaluation. Slide 4, please. Based on SQUARE, we present an ontology evaluation framework named OQUARE. According to the literature, many ontology evaluation approaches have been designed for identifying the best ontology. However, our main goal is the identification of strengths and flaws of the ontologies in order to support users and developers to make decisions according to their needs. In this world, ontologies are viewed as a result of the application of a construction process, and they are evaluated as a product, independently of the particular development process. Ontology evaluation is here approached from a double perspective. On the one hand, an ontology is a software artifact, and it can be evaluated as a part of an information system. On the other hand, an ontology is also a tool that has to be useful. Hence, metrics for measuring the technical quality of the software artifact are useful. Slide 5, please. Adapting SQUARE to ontologies requires the definition of the whole standard in terms of ontologies. I mean that we need ontology-oriented quality requirements, quality models, quality metrics, and quality evaluation. In SQUARE, the quality model is defined in terms of quality characteristics, and each characteristic has a set of quality subcharacteristics associated, which are measured through quality metrics. You can see that in the slide. The current version of OQUARE includes so far the quality model and the quality metrics. Slide 6, please. First, the adaptation process requires analyzing which of SQUARE characteristics were applicable to ontologies in order to reuse them. As a result, characteristics such as maintainability or functional adequacy were adapted to ontologies and included in OQUARE. Moreover, according to the state of the art of ontologies, structural features are important to evaluate their quality, but they are not considered in SQUARE. Consequently, we added such characteristics to our framework. The whole ontology quality model is present in this graph. The characteristics appear in bold, and below each characteristic, we can find its sub-characteristics. It should be known, for example, that functional adequacy sub-characteristics are criteria for evaluating ontology according to the degree of accomplishment of functional requirements. In the graph, we can see, for example, functional adequacy has as sub-characteristics reference ontology, or, for example, knowledge reuse, and in maintainability, which is from square, has sub-characteristics like reusability or changeability. Slide 7, please. As I have said before, each sub-characteristic is measured by a set of sub-quality metrics. We study the quantitative metrics defined in software engineering, and in particular, object-oriented properties. The speed ontologies and object-oriented design have different properties. There are a series of shared notions, as the existence of classes, individuals, and properties that can be exploited to adapt object-oriented programming metrics to ontology. We have adapted 7 metrics from object-oriented programming. For instance, coupling between objects and weighted method counts. Furthermore, we have also reused 7 metrics like the correction or relation readiness that were developed by different authors from the ontology engineering community. Slide 8, please. In this slide, we can see the notion used in the definition of the metrics. We can associate this concept with our modeling primitives, like there, classes refer to all class, relationships refer to all object properties, properties refer to all data type properties, and individuals refer to all individuals. Slide 9. We can see here a list of the software metrics adapted to OQUAR. These metrics measure classes, subclasses, and methods. For instance, coupling between objects means the number of related classes, or depth of inherent stream means length of the largest path from the thin class to a left class, or for instance, number of ancestor classes means the number of parent classes per left class. Slide 10, please. This slide shows some of the metrics they use for ontology state of the art. Some of them are from different authors, such as Yao Horn and Schorn, or Tartir and Apinar, with Ontokua, that we present in the previous talk. For instance, attribute richness, which means number of attributes per class, number of properties, which means number of properties per class, and annotation richness, which means number of annotation per class. Next slide, please. In this slide, the number 11, I'm going to sum up. The quality model is defined in terms of quality characteristics. In addition to this, each quality characteristic has a set of quality sub-characteristics associated, which are measured through quality metrics. This graph shows, for instance, that the structural characteristic has the formal relation support as a sub-characteristic, which, in turn, is evaluated using the metrics relation chainness. It should be noted that 2 different sub-characteristics could be sharing some metrics, like metrics onto for scan and value reconciliation, which is shared with formal relation support, which is a structural sub-characteristic. In slide 12, please. Once the quality characteristics, sub-characteristics, and metrics have been presented, we focus on the quantitative values of the metrics are turned into quality values of sub-characteristics and characteristics. For this, SQUARE uses a 1 to 5 scale for quality characteristics and sub-characteristics, where 1 means not acceptable, 3 is minimally acceptable, and 5 meets each set of requirements. Consequently, in OQUER, a mapping between the range of value of the metrics and the range 1 to 5 was needed. It should be noted that not all the metrics had the same interpretation. That is, some cases, high value of a metric are not a good result for the subcharacteristic or characteristic. Slide 13, please. It could be seen that the different metrics generate quantitative values in different ranges. So, some metrics produce an absolute value, whereas other metrics generate a relative one. In order to define the scale recommendation and best practice of the software engineering and ontology engineering were applied, for those primitives whose result is a relative value, one unit in the OQUER scale corresponds to 20%. The scoring squares are provided in the range 1 worst and 5 best, and the communities that apply squares must define how the score of the metrics are mapped into such range. The same solution is adopted in how scores are combined to provide a score for the subcharacteristics and characteristics. Such decision should be the result of some community agreement. Slide 14, please. OQUER has been applied in 2 case studies in the last year. One of them was the evaluation of 2 versions of the ontology of type of cells, and the other one was a set of 10 measurements on units ontology. The main result of such evaluation can be found in the following link. In this case study, we have run a double evaluation for the set of ontologies. First, they were evaluated manually, and second, they were evaluated by using a homemade software tool that implements the quality framework. In the next slide, I will talk about the second case study, the units of measurement. This graph shows the manual evaluation of the 10 ontologies. As you can see in the graphic, most of the metrics most of the subcharacteristics got a good evaluation, but it was per se very difficult for the participants. In the last 15, we can see the results without human intervention. The comparison with the result of the manual evaluation showed that the scores are not significantly different. Then, we can say that the automatic score provides expected results, that is, results similar to the manually obtained ones. All the evaluated ontologies have an acceptable score for most criteria. For instance, the highest score has been obtained for the structural characteristics, 2.03, or another one for functional adequacy, 3.77. Slide 17, please. As has been seen in the previous slide, the framework results are not a global score to the ontology, but a set of scores for the quality subcharacteristics, permitting to identify the strengths and weakness of the ontology. For instance, the highest score obtained for the structural and functional adequacy characteristics, then the ontology's structure can guide shared processes and provides a semantic context to evaluate which data are wanted by the user. And due to the lowest score were for reliability and operability, that ontologies require more effort to be used, understood, and learned. It shows that OQUAR is able to identify the difference between ontologies in the same domain. An initial finding is that if we consider absolute values, the human judgment produces higher difference in scores, but we don't know today whether this might be caused by the need of adjustment of the evaluation method or the subjective nature of the human judgment. In this sense, we made a preliminary evaluation of OQUER. slide 18 shows this discriminatory evaluation. The research objective of this experiment were to evaluate the appropriateness, completeness, and usability of the quality model and quality metrics of OQR. In order to identify the positive and negative aspects of the current version of the framework, we also investigate the feasibility of automatic evaluation process through the comparison of the manual evaluation done by the experts and the ones obtained by a software implementation of the framework. This evaluation has been performed by an international panel of experts in ontology engineering. One of the main conditions were that experts should not have applied an active role in the design of OQR. However, they should be active and interested in ontology quality. They should belong to different research institutions and also be from different countries in order to represent different ontology modeling schools. Slide 19, please. The evaluation experiment was divided in two steps. The first one aimed to evaluate the quality model. For this, experts were asked to manually evaluate an ontology with no support except their own expertise and resources. Then they answered a questionnaire which contained questions about the difficulty and appropriateness of the subcharacteristics. The second one aimed to evaluate the quality metrics. For this, the experts were asked to repeat the process with the support of a series of pre-calculated metrics. And in the end, they answered a questionnaire about the usefulness and relevance of the metrics. The evaluation showed that the method has a relative acceptance between experts. However, experts found some problems applying OQR in both steps. In the first one, the lack of knowing the intent context of use of the ontology, as well as the definition of some sub-characteristics, was part of the difficulties. In the second one, the experts found difficult some metrics because of their definition in an all-independent way, whereas the ontologies under evaluation were in our format. Slide 20, please. As I said before, quality model and quality metrics were evaluated. This graph shows that more than 59% of the subcharacteristics defined in a query are highly appropriated, and only 20% were considered with the lowest appropriateness. 8% of the subcharacteristics were scored as not appropriate and difficult to measure, such as cohesion, recoverability, learnability, and helpfulness. Similar results were obtained for metrics. Most of them were considered useful and relevant for at least one subcharacteristic. Only 3 of them were considered not useful for all its associations. In the slide 21, we can see the recommendation made by the expert to improve OQR. They suggested new metrics, like relation in use or new association between metrics and subcharacteristics, like annotation rings for learnability. In some cases, they recommended having a limited number of metrics per subcharacteristics. The expert considers that some metrics make sense only in a given context of use, and that making a distinction between context-dependent and independent metrics is important, because in the absence of additional information, it might be not possible to assess some task-based characteristics. Slide 22, please. As a result of the experiment, a series of issues are considered to be discussed in the ontology evaluation community. It is clear that if the community wants to ontology quality evaluation to be an engineering activity, there must be a standardization such an evaluation process. For discussing adding, eliminating characteristics to characteristics, metrics, and its association, a wiki named OQR and a questionnaire have been created. Contributions are welcome following next links. Slide 23, please. As future work, we would like to extend and redefine OQR with the characteristics, subcharacteristics, metrics, and associated and associations collected from the ontology community, as well as to define the quality requirements model, which will allow for determining potential context of use, which will be used for the human evaluators. Given its relation with the square, OQR provides a family of evaluation methods. New methods can be defined by just adapting the number of subcharacteristics associated with each characteristic, or the number of metrics associated with each subcharacteristic, and the corresponding weights. Finally, we are extending the homemade tool, which will allow the definition of different evaluation methods based on a OQR framework, including profiles for our ontology. Okay, thank you very much. This is the next slide, 24.
Okay, thank you so much, Astrid. I think you've given yet another perspective on these the metrics that one could apply to ontologies. And at this point, I'd like to open it up for people to ask questions by voice. But as you do so, and please raise your hand on the chat board to get into queue, but also please try to annotate the questions you're asking by voice on the chat so that in the future people will be able to also track those questions. So there's been a lot of activity on the chat board about many issues. I'm sure some people might want to expand upon the questions they've asked, or perhaps the speakers could expand upon some of the answers provided. So let me pause just a minute for people if they want to raise their hands. And in the meantime, I will say I was just putting on the chat. We were having a little sidebar conversation about whether intrinsic or extrinsic evaluation is more valued, at least in the context of project management. And I was raising also the question as to whether or not people have thoughts on ontology development environments where some of these evaluation tools could be essentially hardwired in so that, unlike, say, an Eclipse environment where it's just checking syntax, you could actually have the development environment flag items as you create an ontology, or make recommendations as far as improvements as well. So I invite people to weigh in. I'm surprised no one's raised their hand yet. Would any of the speakers want to expand upon any of the points they've made? Doug Fox, go ahead.
Okay. One feat thing I was seeing, and I think Amanda has pointed out also, is that some of these features are features, I would say, of the ontology that are being checked out, and some are features more of a knowledge base. And I think such things can be distinguished and need to be distinguished. Samir had a number of measurements, and at one point he said these have to do with instances and these more with types. There are features that we have for, what the structure is of the classes, what the structure is of the relations, the interrelationships between them, and then those are, I would call, ontology features, whereas when you're dealing with instances of the classes and what is being populated and how the relations are actually being used, that is more of a knowledge base feature. And in many cases, what I find is that people, when they create something in their own institution, organization, company, whatever, they bring the two things together, which makes it hard for sharing. And if you're used to those sorts of things, you may tend to create a tool that analyzes both of them. I think what we really want to do is to separate the two concepts, that of checking for validity and problems in an ontology versus in a knowledge base.
Yes. Does Samir, do you want to respond to that at all? And you may need to do a star 7 again. I'm not sure.
Yes, you have to do star 7 again. I muted
okay.
Everyone.
Yeah, but very faintly. Maybe you could get closer to the microphone.
Okay. What about now?
Perfect.
Excellent. Okay, so I'm still unclear exactly what does doc mean by differentiating between the knowledge base itself and the ontology, because some of the metrics we have developed were about the properties of the ontology and how deep the ontology is. So it's more than just a knowledge base, according to my understanding. I'm still unclear about what does that mean exactly.
No, you have both of those. What you have the features of the ontology, the depth, but you also have features of the knowledge base. What is populated, at what level they are populated, what areas are populated versus what areas aren't. An ontology that is shared even in different divisions of the same company, different knowledge bases on the same ontology would populate one area versus another. One may be sparsely populated or unpopulated in one use of the ontology, and another use of the ontology, the area that is populated would be different.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense. I agree. There might be a distinction here. Now I get your point. I think, there is some distinction between these two aspects, whether you're just talking about the data itself, or you're talking maybe about more, or richer or more meaningful attributes of the, or metrics.
Okay, Peter, did you have a question, or was that related to the sound?
Yes, I actually have three questions/remarks to make. I'll try to hurry. One is I extended the invitation to our friends doing the OOPS tool. And actually, that same invitation should go to all the panelists today. And for this summit, I mean, we are contemplating. We don't know yet, as the organizing committee is still developing some of the possibilities, but there may be a hackathon exercise that has been talked about whereby we get tool developers together for some really interesting interactions and collaboration. And Maria and Marie Carmen have both graciously agreed to join us, so I invite the other panelists to join us, consider joining us as well. That's one. My second question, which I also put on the chat, is how do some of the more rigorously developed ontologies, like maybe simple ones like BFO, Dolce, all the way to maybe PSL, Sumo, Psych, I mean, I of course I know these are not natively developed in OWL, but most of them probably have OWL versions. How do they fare when you put them through your evaluation system or your tools? Did anyone try? I guess some observations and insights on those exercises would be interesting. Maybe any panelists?
Looking for some of the well-known ontologies have gone through the mill.
Right. So how should I paraphrase the question? Did anyone send the more rigorously developed ontologies through their tools or their evaluation and compared those to, let's say, the other ontologies that they were evaluating? So did anyone evaluate, let's say, Dolce?
This is Samir here. We haven't. It's a very good suggestion. I think I'll do that as soon as I can.
Yeah, those would be interesting. Actually, along the same line, which comes my third comment, is along the same line, the organizing committee has always been sort of looking for, I mean, what can we do that would be interesting? A couple of thoughts. For example, Mike Denny, who is going to lead an effort in surveying what tools and software systems are out there, had suggested maybe we will send ontologies through those tools and see what happens. I mean, that comes an idea of, let's say, a clinic, I mean, for people who have ontologies to work with people who have ontology tools to see how their work fare. Or more appropriately, if we have users or user community that have real needs to evaluate his or her ontology, I mean, find the right ontology. Maybe we can do clinic-like exercises, I mean, as opposed to hackathon exercises, which are for software people, and help sort of develop some real use cases and maybe report back towards the end of the summit.
Yeah. So, and Peter, I will direct you to the chat where Marie Carmen has, in fact, it seems, evaluated Dolce with OOPS, and I would invite her to comment, how did it fare? How many things popped up in your 35 categories? And you'll have to press *7. I can't hear anything. Marie Carmen, are you speaking? And if so, we can't hear you. Okay, well, keep trying, and in the meantime, let me move to Amanda. You have a question?
Yes. I just wanted to follow up on the question I posted in the chat with some follow-up. To simplify what I was asking there, in the last couple of presentations especially, there's some of the characters being measured are very clearly intrinsic characteristics of the ontology. What I'm not as clear on as whether they are quality characteristics. That is, we could measure, you know, how many triples there are in an ontology, but that would have a seemingly arbitrary relationship to quality in the absence of some external constraints. So, and these, in particular, I have seen many cases where no substantial evaluation of ontologies is done within a project, but the enterprise management or middle management level, some metrics are expected from the ontology utilizing project. And what gets sent up are things like how many relationships are there? How many levels of inheritance are there? usually not quite as rich as, as Samir has the relationship diversity, which I quite like. It seems interesting, but at the same time, those tend to go along with things like sheer numbers of constants or you know, numbers of triples that get reported. And those, you know, often the management's happy to see those going up, whereas if quality's work is going down, is going on, they might sometimes be going down if you're representing efficiently. So my question is, since these really great evaluation projects are including these metrics, it suggests to me that somebody thinks that these are important measures of quality of an ontology. And it could be that they're actually extrinsic, that is, or mixed, that is, that under some circumstances or in some domains, they're very important. But there's, to people working in those domains are so accustomed to them that they become viewed as intrinsic. Or it could be that it's just sort of a handed down way of measuring, and there really isn't an argument for treating them as quality. So I just want to open the question to the panelists in general. You know, do you have a particular reason for treating these particular metrics, which sort of you might want to say measure the topography of the ontology, as measurements of quality per se? And now I'll mute myself and listen.
Okay, Samir has raised his hand maybe to answer that, and then I'll get back to Marie Carmen for the earlier issue. Samir?
I can wait, Marie, if you would like that.
Marie, you want to give another shot? Can you try speaking?
Can you hear me now?
Ah, a little quiet, but yes, I can hear you.
Hello?
Yes? Can you get closer to the microphone?
Is better now?
It's a little better, yes. Why don't you go ahead? This is the question.
I'm fine. I'm sorry. Yeah, no, my point is that we have already done these kind of evaluations with established ontologies or some ontologies that are more or less well-known in the community. And, for example, in the case of Dolce, we evaluate Dolce Light, and we found some pitfalls, not too much, but some related with annotations, because there are not too much annotations in Dolce. And also we found that there are some recursive definitions and also some relations that are inverse of itself. So there are not too much pitfalls in Dolce, for example, but there are some pitfalls in this ontology. And for the rest of ontologies we evaluated, we found similar results. We have planned to publish this kind of results in the near future.
Okay, I was anticipating my follow-up question about whether you had published it.
Yeah.
Okay. Peter here, can I follow up on that one?
Okay.
Does the tool, like, scale up? I mean, did you try the more complicated, I mean, the bigger ones, like maybe Sumo or Psych or Research Psych?
I would
assume...
Hello?
Yes.
This is Maria. To answer your question, I can say we tried with DBpedia ontology. That is really large, and there is a lot of too many classes and properties, and it scales badly, but after 20 minutes, it gives the results.
Ah.
But we have tried with a huge ontology.
And I assume you are limiting yourself to owl representations, is that correct?
Yes, because I haven't mentioned that but it was in the slide. We use GINA, and up to now we load only the owl models. So we stick to GINA software, what it allows.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and all right. Now, we're getting close to the closing time, so I do want to give Samir a chance to respond to Amanda's question earlier. Samir?
Yes, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. I think Amanda's question raises or reminds me of a few bad memories from reviews I got of some of the attempted publications, because that was exactly some of the comments reviewers sent us, that, you know, this is not evaluating quality. These are, you know, not relevant to quality. And it is exactly your point. And I saw the comment is, it depends on the case or the scenario. It can be useful to some people, you know, to just see how many classes are defined in an ontology or how deep is the ontology, the schema. But sometimes for people, they are willing to know or they need to know what classes have instances, how they can evaluate it. So for quality per se, it depends on the application or domain for which the ontology is developed or being used. But you cannot just say, well, an ontology with too many classes that have no instances is bad or good. It just depends.
Yeah. Okay, Leo, I think you've been talking along these lines on the chat. You want to weigh in?
Yeah. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. This is just in the interest of time to go back to some questions I had for Maria, but everyone else too. For example, the OOPS tool, one of the questions I had was whether, you know, if an ontology imports other ontologies or references other ontologies in, you know, more directly by just using the namespace of the ontology. Do you track down those kinds of issues when you do your evaluation? Do you pull those ontologies in and evaluate them too? Because that could be crucial, for example, for modularity purposes. And then the second point is just to directed at one of the characteristics that Maria raised, which was P9, identifying missing basic information. I just wondered what that was. Thank you.
So, Maria or Marie, either of you would like to...
Hello?
Yes, I can hear you.
Okay, so regarding the first question about importing other ontologies and having into account different namespaces, we do now in some pitfalls, but there is a debate about whether we should take into account the imported one or not. So at the end, we will update OOPS, letting the user choose whether they consider the imported ontology and other namespaces part of their own ontology or not, because from my point of view, if you import another ontology, you commit to that ontology, and from that point, it's part of your ontology as well. But there are other points of view, so we will allow the user to choose.
Okay.
I hope I answered your question.
I think that was the first one, and then he had the question on one of your...
Yeah, just a comment on that. I mean, of course, if you import the ontology, it's entailed. All of its entailments are in the target ontology, so it's something that probably should be evaluated.
Yeah, up to now, it is evaluated as long as the imported ontologies are available online, so we can resolve the URL pointing to the other ontology.
Ah.
So up to now, we take into account the imported ontologies.
Okay, thanks.
And regarding the missing information, we haven't automated that pitfalls because we need to check against the domain being modeled or other requirements. But the origin was like we find things like, I don't know, this path starts in a place, but they didn't model that the path could have an ending in another point. So it's like things that you a human could think that more information could be added.
Good.
I don't know if I have answered.
Thank you.
Okay, Fabian, you've been very quiet so far. What do you have to say?
I would like to follow up on Amanda's question. So I think, if I understood Samir's response correctly, he said basically, well, whether the metrics that we're using are metrics for quality or not depends on the context. And, of course, that's a, you know, very unsatisfying answer in the sense that if I want to measure quality and then afterwards I have something which might not be showing me quality, then it's not very helpful. So the question is, can we at least characterize the circumstances or narrow it down somehow and say under which circumstances is it, for example, relevant how deep an ontology is? I mean, that would, for example, you know, is one of the metrics which, for me, intuitively has no connection to quality. But I mean, assuming he believes that there is a good reason in some context to measure that. So the question is, what are the contexts, and you know, how do I distinguish whether the metric is relevant in my context or not?
May I just jump in and maybe provide a quick answer?
Sure, go ahead.
This is, again, similar to what I was talking to Amanda about. It depends. Maybe it doesn't make any sense to you, but for somebody who is interested maybe in a top-level ontology, is interested in a shallow ontology that has many classes for each on each level, that covers a lot of the domain, or maybe just general purpose for all the knowledge, if you can say, if there is anything like that, versus somebody who is interested in a very specific domain, like microbes or bacteria. He is interested in this is a certain type, and this then there are, you know, for biology there are too many classifications that go from a creature down to the very specific type of that creature, maybe 10 or 15 levels down. So in some cases, this is not a quality indicator. In some other situations, this can be a quality indicator.
Right. My question, I understood the answer when you gave that to Amanda. What I was asking is, how do we characterize these situations? So in order to make the measurement that you provide useful, I need to know that in which metrics, in which contexts are significant. I mean, you have a very large number of metrics, and you're saying that some of them are useful in some contexts. But
right.
They're probably not all relevant all at the same time. So in order for me to make sense of a measurement, I will need to kind of have a correlation or a description about what metrics I need to pay attention to given my application or my purposes.
That's right. This is Samir again. That's right. And what you can do is tweak the weights for each of the measures. Maybe if you're interested in an ontology with large coverage, maybe all classes you would like would have instances. So you would zero all the other weights and maybe just focus on this metric itself. So, yes, you would have to know that.
Okay, we're really running out of time, but let me give Gesualdo a chance to weigh in since his work was presented. I can't hear you yet.
Okay, can you hear me?
Yes, yes.
Okay, it's about this question. Because, for example, when you are using a standard like Square, the idea is to have an evaluation process that makes sense for a particular community and a specific context of use could be seen as a particular community which want to use ontology for particular purposes. one of the results of the evaluation experiment with external experts was like, okay, we have these metrics, but we don't know what the developers want to use the or the ontology builders want to use the ontology for. What is the context of use for this ontology? So one of the things we are thinking about the evolution of the of our query is like developing like evaluation profiles. It's like the requirements module. If the community is able to define some clear context of uses, so you can define combinations of relevant metrics from the different characteristics and subcharacteristics that could be evaluated for those particular ontologies, for those ontologies which you want to be used in a particular context. This is more or less our view of how to evolve and how to deal with these metrics which can be interesting for some uses, but not that interesting for other ones.
Mm-hmm. Okay. This is actually fascinating, and there's more coming, but I think I'm going to have to draw it to a close for at least our oral conversation. I really want to thank the presenters who I think stimulated all of us on this issue. We will have another Track A intrinsic evaluation session on March 7th. So queue up those questions, and please let either Leo Oberst or myself know if you have some suggestions of speakers. We're still collecting those. Leo, I don't know, do you want to have any parting comments before we close out this session?
Well, just a general comment here that I think the issue of quality does need to be explored. If we only agree that evaluation is about quality, and so gauging two different ontologies in terms of quality as opposed to other metrics, and then how the characteristics of that quality is defined. I think that some of these talks we've seen today, for example, in describing some metrics, they go towards the same end. It's giving us an ability to define kind of like meta characteristics of an ontology so that we can compare ontologies. And if our measure of quality varies, perhaps we can, you know, gauge our measures of quality against those.
Yes. And I do think that Amanda makes a good point, is that quality may be more extrinsic, but so we can define clearly some of these actual measures. And then we have to still decide, or maybe each of us independently has to decide how much attention or relevance those have to our ultimate purpose. But I will say we're 6 minutes after the appointed ending hour, so I again just want to thank everyone for participating, both in the audience and the speakers. And with that, I am going to declare this session of the Ontology Summit closed. Thanks very much for participating.
Yeah, thanks all. Bye-bye.